Chapter 33. In autumn days, when the Topkapi harem was filled with hundreds of veiled beauties, an uninvited entry into its forbidden precincts would have been met by razor-sharp scimitars in the hands of the African eunuchs who guarded the place. As Austin and Karina stepped into a long courtyard, the handsome young tour guide gave them a steely stare that was almost as cutting. He stopped his spiel. "Yes," he said. Austin put on his best Gomer Pyle grin. "Sorry we're late." The guide frowned. The harem tours were conducted on a strict timetable. No one from the ticket booth had called to say there were two add-ons. He clicked his hand radio to call the security guard. Karina stepped over and gave the guard her most beguiling smile. She fumbled in her pocketbook and extracted a 100 lira bill. "Do we tip you now or later?" The guard smiled and clipped the hand radio onto his belt. "It is customary to tip at the end of the tour, but only if you are satisfied." "I'm sure I'll be satisfied," Karina said with a flutter of her long eyelashes. The guide cleared his throat and turned back to the mixture of about 2 dozen Turks and assorted foreigners clustered around him. "At one time, the harem housed more than 1,000 concubines, slaves, sultan's wives, and the sultan's mother. The harem was like a small city with more than 400 rooms. On your left are the quarters of the black eunuchs and the chief eunuch who guarded the harem. Other doors lead to the quarters of the imperial treasurer and the chamberlain. You can go through that door and inspect the apartments of the eunuchs," he said. The guide gave the same speech in Turkish and then led the way into the guard's dormitory like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Austin held Karina back until they were alone in the courtyard. His blue-green eyes scanned the doors, searching for a possible escape route. He tried one door handle. The door was unlocked. He hoped they could lose their pursuers in the vast labyrinth of apartments and courtyards. "Kurt," Karina said. The carriage gate door had opened. Buck stepped into the courtyard with his hard-faced friends and signaled to his men to spread out. They moved 3 abreast toward their prey. The guide and the tour group poured out of the eunuch's living quarters into the courtyard, creating a human barrier of camera-toting tourists. Austin and Karina merged with the group as it went through a door that stood in a vestibule at the far end of the courtyard. Austin glanced over his shoulder. Buck and his men were shouldering their way through the crowd. "What should we do?" Karina whispered. "Enjoy the tour for now, and when I say run, run."
"Run where?"
"Still working on that," Austin said. Karina muttered in Italian. Austin didn't need a translator to tell him she was cursing. He saw her anger as a sign that she hadn't given in to despair. The guide led the way through a square domed chamber. Stopping every few minutes to deliver a speech in Turkish and in English, the guide pointed out where the concubines lived, where the children of the harem went to school, and where the food for the vast complex was prepared. Austin glanced longingly at the doors and corridors that offered possible escape routes. There was no way he and Karina could break away from the crowd. With each stop, Buck and his friends drew closer. Austin put himself in the shoes of the pursuers. The 3 men would move in and separate him from the crowd. 2 men would finish him off with their knives. The 3rd would grab Karina. Buck and his thugs were all former special ops men. Their training would have included knife fighting and assassination. A hand clamped over his mouth to prevent him from calling out. A quick thrust of a blade between his ribs. By the time bystanders realized murder had been done, Austin would be breathing his last. Buck and company would slip away in the confusion that would follow. If he was going to make a move, he'd better do it soon. The tour group stepped into a large carpeted room. The walls were decorated in 17th century blue and white tile. A wide sofa covered in gold brocade sat on a platform under a gilded canopy supported on four columns. The walls were decorated with a combination of Baroque and Rococo style. Light filtered through the stained glass windows in the upper section of the domed room. The guide said they were in the throne room, or royal saloon. At one end of the chamber was another platform where the concubines, wives, and the sultan's mother sat during affairs of state or to enjoy music and dancing. The crowd began to break up, removing the human buffer Austin and Karina had been using to fend off Buck and his gang. As the group dissipated, Austin faced the three men with only a few tourists in between them. Now or never. Austin whispered to Karina to play along. He took her by the hand and sidled up to the guide. "Would it be possible for us to leave the tour?" Austin said. "My wife is not feeling well. She's pregnant." The guide took in Karina's slim profile.
"Pregnant?"
"Yes," Karina said with a demure smile.
"Only a few months."
Karina spread her fingers across her flat abdomen. The guide blushed and hurriedly pointed to a doorway.
"You can go out that way."
They thanked him and headed for the exit. "Wait," the guide said. He lifted his walkie-talkie to his lips.
"I'll call the guard to escort you."
He spoke into the hand radio. The guard would arrive in a few minutes. He told them to stay with the group in the meantime. Buck had seen Austin talking to the guide. When the guide spoke into his radio, he assumed that Austin had called for help.
"Let's do it," he said to his men.
Austin was guiding Karina from one part of the room to the other, trying to put space between them and their pursuers. He was learning that hide-and-seek wasn't made to be played in the open. The three men closed in. Buck was close enough so that Austin could see the murderous gleam in his eye. Buck reached under his jacket. A burly security guard entered the royal saloon, and the tour guide pointed out Austin and Karina. Austin played his ace card. Pointing an accusing finger at Buck and the two other men, he roared at the top of his lungs, "PKK! PKK!" The PKK was shorthand for Partia Kereren Kurdistan, or Kurdistan Workers' Party, a Marxist-Leninist guerrilla organization that wanted to set up an independent Kurdish state in southeastern Turkey. The PKK had been staging a violent campaign against the Turkish government since 1978, attacking government property and tourist areas and, in the process, killing thousands. The guard's amiable expression vanished, and he fumbled for the revolver in its belt holster. In Turkey, shouting PKK was the equivalent of throwing gasoline onto an open fire. The guard had finally got his gun out. The guard saw the knife in Buck's hands. Holding the revolver with two hands, he shouted in Turkish. Buck turned and saw the muzzle pointed at his chest. The knife clattered to the floor, and he raised his hands in the air. One of Buck's men was aiming a pistol at the guard. Austin threw a battering ram's shoulder block into the man's midsection and the gun went flying. They crashed to the floor and Austin drew his arm back and nailed the man with a short punch to the jaw. The throne room had emptied out. The tour guide had ducked into a doorway and was calling for reinforcements on his radio. Austin's move had diverted the guard. Buck slipped his hand under his jacket and came out with a gun. It was a fatal mistake. The middle-aged guard was a Turkish army veteran. Although he was thick around the middle, he remembered the discipline that had been drilled into him. Austin yelled PKK again and pointed at Buck. The guard turned, calmly aimed at Buck's torso, and squeezed the trigger. The bullet caught Buck square in the chest and sent him crashing onto the Sultan's divan.
Austin scrambled to his feet, grabbed Karina, who had been frozen in place, and guided her toward the exit door. They flew along a corridor, made a blind turn, and retraced their steps to a small room that had a door in the corner. The door led out onto a terrace that was drenched with sunlight. Standing on the terrace were the two men who had chased them through the abandoned village. Austin stepped in front of Karina to protect her. As the men started toward Austin and Karina, the harem door burst open and Buck's men stepped out into the open with guns in hand. They blinked in the bright sunlight and didn't see the Turks reach under their jackets for guns, which had silencers attached. The guns coughed simultaneously. Buck's men crumpled to the deck. While one Turk kept his gun trained on the door, the other took Austin's arm.
"Come," he said. "It's okay. We're friends."
He gave Austin a friendly pat on the back and winked at Karina. The other man took up the rear. He was talking on a cell phone and frequently glanced over his shoulder to see if they were being followed. The Turks hid their guns when they entered the public area and led the way through a maze of buildings and courtyards to the palace gate. A silver Mercedes waited at the curb with its engine running. The lead Turk opened the passenger door. Austin and Karina got into the back seat and discovered it was already occupied. Their old friend Cemil smiled and gave a soft-spoken order to the driver. The Mercedes pulled away from the palace complex and merged with the Istanbul traffic flow.
"Those were your men," Karina said.
"Don't worry. They are not angry about the tire your friend ruined. It was their own fault. I told them to keep watch on you, but they got too close."
"I'll pay for a new tire," Austin said. Cemil chuckled. As a Turk, he explained, he could not refuse the offer.
"I apologize if my men frightened you," he said.
He explained that after he had seen them in the cisterns, he had heard disturbing rumors. Hard-eyed mercenaries had arrived in town. They had come into the country unarmed so as not to attract attention and had acquired weapons from a local dealer who was a friend of Cemil's. More worrisome, they had arrived the same day as Karina and Austin and were staying in the same hotel. He had sent his men to keep an eye on his friends. After his men had been ditched in the abandoned village, they had returned to Istanbul and kept an eye on the hotel, figuring Austin and Karina would come back for their luggage. They had followed Austin from the archaeological site to Topkapi, only to lose him when he and Karina had ducked into the harem. They had seen Buck and his men go in after them and had run around to the exit. Karina planted a big kiss on Cemil's cheek.
"How can we ever thank you?"
"There is one way. I made a bad business decision that has come to the attention of the international authorities. It would be helpful if you vouched for my character should the situation become awkward."
"It's a deal," Karina said.
Cemil's cheerful manner changed.
"Your hotel is no longer safe. My men will pick up your luggage and move you to an inn where you will be okay for the night. I have a lot of friends in Turkey, but people are easily bought and sold, and I could not guarantee your safety indefinitely."
"I think Cemil is saying the climate here is no longer healthy," Austin said.
"Your friend puts it very well," Cemil said. "My advice is to get out of Istanbul as quickly as possible."
Austin wasn't one to disregard good advice, but he had unfinished business to attend to. The Mercedes dropped them off at the Bosphorus dig, and arrangements were made to pick them up in 2 hours. Hanley was in a shed that had been set up as a conservation laboratory. The plaster casts were laid out on a table. They were dark gray in color.
"I painted the ridges and raised areas to make them stand out," Hanley explained.
Fascinating stuff. Where did you say you got it?
These designs were etched into a Phoenician statue. We'll run them by an expert when we get home, Austin said. Hanley bent over the plaster of Paris replica of the cat that had been entwined around the navigator's legs.
I've got three cats back home, so I got a big kick out of this, he said.
Austin was looking at the swirling lines that were the cat's stripes when his eye began to see patterns that didn't seem random. He held the magnifying glass over the cat's rib section. Almost lost in the feline's stripes was an opposing Z symbol. Unlike the others, which were horizontal, this one was upside down. He handed the glass to Karina, who studied the mark and said, "What does it mean?"
If this is a symbol for a ship, it's either sunk or sinking.
Austin stared at the pattern of lines and whorls. I think this is more than artistic whimsy. We're looking at a map. Those lines depict a coastline. The indentations are bays and coves. He borrowed a digital camera and a tripod. Karina held the casts at a vertical angle. Austin shot dozens of photos and downloaded the pictures on a borrowed laptop computer and sent them to a Numa email address. While Hanley and Karina wrapped the casts in plastic foam, Austin put a call into Zavala at the airport. Zavala said he would meet them the next morning for the flight back to the United States. The damaged subvet had been loaded onto its cargo plane. The Mercedes arrived with their baggage and took Austin and Karina to a small hotel that overlooked the Bosphorus. They turned in early, too tired to enjoy the view, and fell asleep as soon as their heads hit the pillow. When they arose early the next morning, the Mercedes was waiting to take them to the airport. Zavala welcomed them on board with a fresh pot of coffee. Less than an hour later, the Citation was airborne and heading west at 500 miles an hour. How was Istanbul? Zavala said as the plane sped over the Aegean. Austin told him about the encounter with Buck and his gang at Topkapi, the mad dash into the harem, and the rescue by Cemil and his men.
The harem? Wish I could have been there, Zavala said.
Me too. We could have used you when the shooting started, Austin said.
Hell no. I wish I could have been there when the harem was full of beautiful women.
Austin should have known better than to expect any sympathy from his womanizing friend. I understand there's an opening for a eunuch, Austin said. Zavala clamped his knees together.
Ouch, he said. Thanks, but no thanks. I think I'll go up and chat with the pilot.
Austin grinned at his partner's discomfort. His light mood only lasted a moment. Buck and Ridley were dead and their cohorts neutralized, but if Austin's suspicions about Victor Baltazar were correct, there would be more hard-eyed men in his future. Even worse, the baby-faced killer was still on the loose.